From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Donvan in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Ah, jealousy. When it bites hard. It roils and it churns inside you, yet rarely boils over without making you look silly or weak. It's undignified. It's petty. But our guest today says jealousy, despite its ugliness, actually has its uses, and that nature knew what it was doing when it planted the seeds of jealousy in our brains and in our souls. This hour, On Point, the meaning, the history, and the value of jealousy. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always going on. Are you the jealous type? In love, in your workplace, out on the town? Do you hate it in others? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Now joining me from Calgary, Alberta is Peter Tuohy. He is professor of classics at the University of Calgary and author of the new book, Jealousy, of which you will find an excerpt on our website at onpointradio.org. Peter Tuohy, your latest book, Jealousy, the book before that was called Boredom. The book before that was called Melancholy. What's with you and these more morose sides of the human personality?
I guess it does sound pretty morose, doesn't it? I don't think I'm a terribly morose sort of person.
Well, I sure hope not. But what intrigues you about these darker sides of the personality?
You know, I wouldn't have called them so much darker as these sort of domestic emotions.
Oh, domestic.
That's the way I think of it. That what I mean by domestic are these are the sorts of things that a person lives with day after day at the various phases of your life. Who's immune to boredom? Not your household pet, that's for sure. And it seems even not old granddad at times. So that's what I mean by domestic. Uh-huh. That melancholy, I was more interested in the history. So it's depression, but that's something. It is a bit morose, but it's with us. So,
I guess we're going to be talking about who's immune to jealousy, if anyone. But you know what we need on this is a definition of what we mean by the word jealousy, because it gets used around in a lot of different ways. It crosses over with the concept of envy. But what's your working definition of jealousy?
It's pretty simple. It's a triangulated the situation involves a triangle, three people or two people and a thing. There has to be a sense of threat. So one of the persons is usually feels that they're going to lose either the valued relationship or perhaps even the valued thing. And emotions have to run pretty high so that there's a strong feeling of, I don't know how you would describe it, of unease, upset,
and so on. But let's take a listen to something that I think might perfectly go to your point. It's a clip from the TV classic show Friends, happened to be called The One with All the Jealousy, in which Ross is jealous of the man who is at work working with his girlfriend, Rachel.
What's Mark doing answering your phone?
Oh, he's just goofing around.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. Why isn't he goofing around in his own office?
Honey, this is his office, too. I told you, we're Joanna's two assistants.
Why does Joanna need two assistants? How lazy is she?
So are you hearing it all right there, Peter Tuohy, somebody but a little bit threatened by that something he likes and loves and possesses will be taken away from him?
Yeah, there's the triangular situation, and you don't even perhaps have to have possession in it, do you? Because it's something we'd bridle at with other people, the notion of possession. But yes, there you've got the triangle, and there you've got the sense of unease, and there's the jealousy. Who mightn't feel it in such a situation?
All right, I want to listen to something else now from the film Amadeus, 1984, where the composer Antonio Salieri, who had a rivalrous relationship with Mozart, is described always as having been insanely jealous of Mozart, and here he is talking to God about that.
From now on, we are enemies. You and I. Because you choose for your instrument a boastful, lustful, smutty, infantile boy, and give me for reward only the ability to recognize the incarnation. Because you are unjust.
So, Peter, the word jealousy was used about that, but that's a different thing. That is not – Salieri is not trying to protect something he has. he wants something he doesn't have. Does that deserve the term jealousy, or is that envy?
Envy, I guess envy's about gain, isn't it? That's the usual way to distinguish loss with jealousy and gain. So I guess it depends on how you take Salieri's monologue there, that really he's talking about loss. This young upstart has come up and displaced him as the major musician. If that's the way you understand it, then mm-hmm. it's jealousy. But if it's a feeling that he'd like to have what Mozart has in this case, then it's jealousy. It just shows how close the two words come, how interchangeably they're often used.
And is there then a common – the reason I'm bringing this up is, of course, we posted about doing the broadcast, and we had a number of people tweet to us describing themselves with the hashtag English police, scolding us for confusing jealousy and envy. Lisa sends us, jealousy is when you're afraid someone will take what you have. Envy is when you want something that somebody else has. Hashtag English police. And a few others came in like that. But I actually hear you saying that there actually is a lot of overlap between these two concepts.
I think the sort of distinction that's being made is fair enough, and I think I'd make it myself. But it's not the way ordinary speech and ordinary thinking goes. Here's an imagined situation that somebody, there's you, there's a neighbour, and there's a particularly swish house in the neighbourhood that you both really want it. The neighbour gets it. You envy the person's possession of that house, but then it was the only one in the neighbourhood, so their gain has also been your loss. Mm. So it could also be described as jealousy. And it's easy to see how that could work in sexual relations too, which are driven not just by sort of emotive feelings, but also that sense of a desire for possession of the most beautiful girl.
How much has this sense of loss and desire, you said it's driven emotions, how much has it actually driven history?
It's an emotion, and emotions are constant in human beings and in animals throughout history, aren't they? It's the extent to which they're constant, the issue. I suppose some groups, some societies need them more than others. Mm-hmm. My own feeling is that the more individualistic a society is, probably the more anxious it is about jealousy, because there's a lot more competition going on between people for things. So your feeling is that it must be the small village that's full of jealousy. But I'd say rather it's our own societies that these Western societies we live in that are probably that probably have more of them. It's not for nothing we talk about this age of entitlement that we may or may not be living in.
Let's bring in Anna from Lincoln, Massachusetts. Hi, Anna. You're on Point. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I wanted to just throw out an interesting observation as a parent / social scientist. I have three children, and the first two are pretty docile and pretty generous, and my third one came out possessive of me. She thinks she owns me, and the other two are just kind of hanger-oners. And it just has really made me wonder, in a fascinated way, how much of this is just neurologically rooted, maybe in some people more than others.
Is there, Peter Tuohy, as far you went deeply into jealousy in your book, is there a neurological basis? Do parts of the brain light up?
Yeah, there's a neurological basis. It's all the brains haven't been tested yet for all of the things, just as you could imagine. It's a bit tough to stimulate jealousy and then stick a small baby in an fMRI. But I think the business of placement of children in the family, it makes sense, doesn't it, that the first may be the least jealous, that the last of the crew may be the most. It's I suppose the evolutionary basis is that a child's competing with the other children in the family for the attention of the parent. It makes sense it should do it. If it wants to survive the long haul of being looked after, it's going to have to make its presence felt. This is the sort of thing that child psychologists increasingly register all the time with small children.
And what about
anybody who's been a parent?
What about the thought that beyond neurological, there's an evolutionary aspect to jealousy?
I think absolutely. That's the easiest to register in sexual matters. I would think that gene replication is what evolutionary psychologists speak about, and the lengths people will go to guarantee that their genes get passed on. So, in a sense, jealousy is what both women and men will use to try and keep their partner to them for the long haul that's required to bring up these children, to maximize your chances for genetic success. So there's the evolutionary basis in it. And how does it work? Well, it can work in the various ways jealousy can do: wheedling, cajoling, even violence. It's not a good thing.
So jealousy then is one of nature's partners. We are talking about the history and the nature of jealousy, the so-called green-eyed monster, the most shameful, the most powerful emotion. I'm John Donvan, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
He goes to eat at the Ritz, the big steaks.
That's the breaks.
We eat a hominy grits, but from a bag.
What a drag. Got it made.
If we go out on dates, we go in a box on a roller skate.
Well,
what about us?
This is On Point. I'm John Donvan, in for Tom Ashbrook, and we are digging deep into the idea, the feeling that we call jealousy. You can join this conversation. Tell us your great and your awful stories of jealousy. Do you agree that jealousy can ever be a good thing? My guest is Peter Tuohy. He's professor of classics at the University of Calgary and author of the new book, Jealousy. And I'd like to bring in another voice now from New York. We're joined by Dalton Conley. He's professor of sociology at New York University and author of Parentology and the Pecking Order. Dalton, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, John.
So, Dalton, I want to mention we've just received a note from a Twitter follower. Catherine writes, "Never, ever, ever, huge waste of energy." Her point, I'm sure, being that jealousy is a waste of emotion and energy and never a good thing. Is that true? Is jealousy just entirely a bad, negative, drain-inducing waste of life?
I'm sure that nobody on an individual level wants to feel more jealousy or envy. They're among the least pleasant emotions that we can experience. But both for evolutionary reasons and I think just in modern capitalist society, they serve important functions. So, you know, I have jotted down that inequality plus envy equals capitalism. I mean, we all want things that we don't have, that we see around us, that other people have, and there's this inequality. And our response to that can either be really positive or really negative. It can motivate us to work hard, to innovate, to invest more in our education, to get ahead.
But in the way that pain does, that pain can be a motivator. In other words, it's something you want to get away from.
Sure. In the so-called, you know, brutish state of nature, according to Hobbes, we'd see that you know, the caveman down the hall or down the road has an iPhone, and we would just club him over the head and kill him to get it. And now that's that's not a cooperative, productive response. But if we say, okay, well, we're going to make a better phone, and that way we'll quell this emotion, I think that's a positive response. And the people in the Scottish Enlightenment, Adam Ferguson and Millar, thought that you needed inequality, you needed envy together to stimulate the evolution of society and in capitalism in particular. However, as we distinguished, as Peter distinguished between jealousy and envy, jealousy, you know, the constant fear that someone's going to take something that you already have away from you, I could think of another equation: capitalism plus exploitation equals jealousy. And if you think it's interesting to look at something like Occupy Wall Street or the politics of inequality today and ask, is that the politics of envy, as maybe the Republicans would say, or is it the politics of jealousy that the left wing would say? And I think that if you think that the fat cat financiers are taking something away from us when median wages are sagging and they're really exploiting the rest of society by taking something that really belongs to everybody else, then then that's the politics of jealousy, and you could see that the politics of jealousy, some even jealousy itself, has some productive uses, and in this case, a social movement. If it's envy, then maybe everybody should disperse and just work harder. Then that would be what the Republicans would argue.
You're placing us all in one big jealousy fest here. I want to bring in Dennis from Austin, Texas. Hi, Dennis. You're on Point. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I've been a therapist for over 14 years, and one thing that I've kind of learned from working with people is that part of emotional intelligence, part of wisdom and learning how to interact with other people in the way that we need to do now in our culture is to learn that all of our emotions can have a positive and a negative impact and be expressed positively and negatively. Joy can get out of bounds in mania and cause you to go spend too much money or have sex with, people you shouldn't, or do drugs. Anger can help us protect our child. If someone's trying to take our child away from us and we run and stand up to them, maybe they're bigger than us, but anger gives us the strength, or injustice, to stand up against injustice. So I think, the positive emotions can be harmful and expressed negatively, and the emotions that we think are negative, like anger and jealousy, obviously can be very hurtful, but there can be times when we can learn from them or express them in a way that it has a positive impact.
Thanks, Dennis. Interesting counterintuitive point. And when I say counterintuitive, I mean, Peter Tuohy, your book looks at how the arts, literature, plays, poems, movies have dealt with jealousy through the centuries, and it's universally never the story that jealousy is a good thing. Correct? I mean, it's always portrayed as a tragic flaw.
It certainly is, and I think for the reasons Dennis has just been making, it's all about how it's acted out. Literature likes to look at extreme cases, doesn't it? And Shakespeare's an obvious one. The everyday doesn't make good press, but we should be looking at the emotion before it's acted out, perhaps a little more than constantly stressing the violent side of the emotion, because it's beneficial in the way that you could imagine. It's one way, at least in sexual relationships, of often shoring up a flagging relationship. Straying isn't necessarily the strayer's fault. It might be caused by the person who's the wounded partner, and so on. So literature is often unreliable, though infinitely interesting on the topic.
Dalton Conley, is the family an especially potent laboratory for bad jealousy chemistry, as opposed to the workplace and everywhere else?
Sure. I'm sure no place is immune, but you have the intersection of all the modern capitalist stuff I just talked about, but also some powerful evolutionary forces in the family. At the parental level, you have disproportionate investment in child rearing, generally, between mothers and fathers. I mean, at the very least, even if the most egalitarian situation, the mother still has to devote many metabolic resources during pregnancy and lactation, and also knows it's her kid. And throughout most of human history, before genetic testing, fathers could never 100% know. That's great seeds for jealousy and Shakespeare. And then at the kids' level, as you mentioned, kids love their siblings, but they're also in this nail battle with them to get parental attention and investment. And that, as much as in modern society we want to downplay that or think that's bad or think that doesn't exist and everybody loves everybody equally, it does play out in the family.
Sean is joining us from Worcester, Ohio. Sean, welcome to On Point.
I'm actually very compelled by your story this morning. I have one to share with you myself. I do believe that jealousy has a very powerful impact on your emotions and your everyday life. A few years ago, my mother passed away of a drug overdose. She was 45 years old.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I struggled for years watching everybody around me having a mom, and I didn't have one. And I think to get over that certain point in your life, you have to realize that you are blessed to be here today.
So when you say you struggled with seeing everyone else having a mom, you mean that you were jealous or you were envious of them for having mothers?
Every day, all the time.
And it's gone now, that feeling?
Most of it, yes, because I've moved on from that stage in my life. But I still feel that every once in a while when someone says, I'm going to go have Christmas at my mom's house. That's something I can't do. And because she's the only biological family that I had, that made a very powerful impact on my life.
So how did you manage to move on from that, mostly?
I realized that I'm still blessed and gifted to be alive, and I have to move on and accept life for what it is and what it brings to me.
Sean, that is a perfect point that I would like to bring to our two guests. Thanks so much for joining us. But Peter Tuohy, how much is of both jealousy and envy are about not truly appreciating what you already have?
In a case like that, it seems exactly the right story. Doesn't always work that way, but I suppose from a sort of layman's evolutionary sort of sense, you could say in this case that it was the loss that and the jealousy that drove Sean to turn to himself and come to some sort of understanding of his own status as a living creature. Mm-hmm. So there it is, though painful to say, perhaps a helpful thing.
But as you said at the beginning of the program, much of this is about the notion of loss, threatened loss or actual loss. And in that case, it's just it classically right on target. He lost his mom, and yet he was able to move on. Let's bring in Matt from Huntsville, Alabama. Matt, welcome to On Point.
Hello.
Hi.
I just had a comment. You were talking about in relationships, how, you know, jealousy exists because of the evolutionary wanting to make sure you pass on those genes. What's your take on homosexual relationships where there isn't really that evolutionary need to pass on genes, but yet jealousy definitely still exists?
Oh, interesting question. Dalton Conley, want to take that?
Sure. I think that that just because there's there could be, of course, in gay relationships, children and decisions about which individual is going to be the biological or non-biological parent of those children. But that said, even if there is actually no reproduction in a hetero or homosexual couple, that jealousy imprint, that evolutionary circuit is still in place. So we're still, again, it could even be about an object that we're, or a pet or anything, but I think the roots probably still have to do with this, that it was, it helped us pass on our genes for thousands or millions of years.
It's still there. It's still in the DNA.
Yeah.
Let's bring in Daniel from Miami. Daniel, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. How are you doing? Thanks
Good.
For taking my call.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I just wanted to note that I was listening, and it seems like the thought that popped in my mind was that jealousy seems to be more of like a biological, kind of like a defense mechanism when we experience something that is potentially, you know, threatening or anything like that. Usually, we automatically start trying to find a way to defend and retain and keep what is precious to us. And it seems that, like, once that happens, chemicals and everything starts shooting in the brain. And I just wanted to make that point. I'll take the response off the air.
All right. You want to take that, Peter Tuohy, your response to that?
It makes sense to me. There's a famous experiment that Franz de Waal did with two sets of Capuchin monkeys, both fed by their lab attendant, both fed cucumbers. Suddenly the cucumbers for one of the two groups, and there's three people here, the lab attendant, or three individuals, and the two groups of monkeys, suddenly one group were getting grapes. The cucumber Capuchins went crazy at this point, became intensely angry, threw their cucumbers out of the... That's sort of what Daniel's talking about in a sort of a way, that what you're pushing for here and what those monkeys are pushing for, and this was Dewall's point, is social equality and social justice. Now, here's jealousy working out in a completely unexpected way to insist upon equal treatment between people. So a type of a defense mechanism, I think that's the word Daniel used. But yes, I agree with him.
Let's bring in Lisa from Madison, Ohio. Lisa, welcome to On Point.
Well, jealousy is the only emotion that I know that you cannot rectify.
What do you mean?
Because if someone is jealous of you, and this is like on a not a corporate or a commercial level, but personally, if someone looks at you and says, oh, my God, she's got all this, you can't fix it. How are you going to fix jealousy? You're going to give them what they're jealous of?
Do you have some personal experience of this problem?
I do. I have big farms. And people, I've lost friends because they just think that it just, a helicopter flew down and gave me what I have for. And it's like they've shunned me because they're jealous of me. And there's nothing you can do. You can't apologize, like if you were mad at someone or you did someone wrong, you could fix that. But jealousy, you cannot fix.
It's interesting to say that you can't fix it. I want to ask Dalton Conley. And what's interesting is that Lisa's showing us this from the other point of view, from the point of view of the person who is envied. And how difficult that is. What about that, Dalton?
Well, I guess the only way to fix it is to give everything away that they want.
Right. I was thinking the same thing.
And take a vow of poverty. But I think I'm not sure I would agree that it's the only one you can't fix. There's plenty of other emotional disasters that we can't fix in our lives. And as we get older, we accrue that baggage. But I think it creates an inherent tension between individuals, and in a modern capitalist society, one of the very strong social norms is not to mix business and pleasure, not to do business with friends, and in fact, not even to discuss things like how much money you make with a friend, because we really try to keep our friendships as this pure, innocent sphere, really, that doesn't get polluted by things like the marketplace and its attendant emotions like jealousy or envy.
This is On Point. I'm John Donvan, in for Tom Ashbrook, and we're digging deeply into the subject of jealousy in history and in art and in our lives today. You can join the conversation. Are we all about jealousy nowadays? Are we in a world where the temptation to get jealous is being increased by social media? My guests today are Peter Tuohy. He's professor of classics at the University of Calgary and author of the new book, Jealousy. Also, Dalton Conley, professor of sociology at New York University and author of Parentology and the Pecking Order. I'd also now like to bring into the conversation Dodi Stewart. She's joining us from New York. She is director of culture coverage at Fusion.net and her own hub on Fusion's website will be launching in January. Dodi, thanks very much and welcome for thanks and joining us on Point.
Yes, hi. Thank you.
So we were talking about social media. I want to go to something that we pulled off of YouTube this morning. This is the phenomenon of haul videos, and that's haul as in U-Haul or H-A-U-L, pulling in a big haul. A woman named Leanne in Houston goes online talking about all of the things that she just came back from shopping for. This is in April of this year.
Hey, everyone. Okay, so today I have a semi-big haul. It's a lot of clothes. It's actually all clothes except for, like, shoes, and then there's a bag. So we got Nordstrom, Forever 21, and Madewell. First and definitely most favorite top that I got is this kind of tank top white t-shirt with a burger on it. Oh, yeah, we got a burger shirt.
Yep, she got the burger shirt, don't I? My question to you is the cataloging of possessions online in social media. Is that relevant, do you think, to what we're talking about in terms of jealousy today?
I really believe that it's relevant. I think that between Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, you know, the days of just sort of keeping up with just your next door neighbor, it's really expanded into this global enterprise where people you don't even know from a world away have more than you and are really excited to show it off. And I think that it's, you know, you're going on these platforms to be social and keep up with people, and you're faced with this, you know, you're inundated with just how much people have that you don't have.
I mean, you've heard that we've been sort of wrestling with this correct distinction to be made between jealousy and envy, and this sounds more like jealousy in the envy sense. But as Peter Tuohy points out, that what they have both in common, jealousy and envy, is a sense of loss. So do you think a sense of loss comes into play when people see their friends having a lot of stuff online? They feel like they're losing something?
Yes, I think so, because it's becomes competitive to some extent, and there are many different layers. So definitely, I think the entry point is envy, but the videos, the Instagrams on Facebook, it comes with hearts and likes and thumbs up, and then it becomes a competition, and these are people who are taking the spotlight away from you and taking attention away from you because they're doing something more exciting than you're doing. And so I think I think there's envy, and I think that there's jealousy involved because they're attracting people with all the things that they have and attracting a crowd, attracting comments, and those people are, you know, maybe glossing over what you're doing.
We're getting some interesting social media feedback ourselves, actually, as this program unfolds. We've received this tweet from Zarina Ruby. She says, jealousy is the notion that you are more deserving of what someone else has. Lose the inflated ego. Lose the jealousy. On our website, somebody identifying himself or herself as MS says, I am almost never jealous because I usually, one, try to focus on being happy for the other person. Two, remember that the grass is always greener on the other side. How good do you think we are at that, Dodai?
Well, I think most people aren't very good at it. And I think that, you know, it feels personal sometimes if you're seeing friends hanging out without you or partying without you or conversations or events that you weren't invited to. You know, you can see conversations you were left out of on Facebook. And I think that it does hurt sometimes. And
it's junior high school on steroids is what it sounds like. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, I just think it has to do with security and insecurity. And I do think it depends on how secure you feel, how much it bothers you.
What are you hearing, Dalton Conway, in what Dodai is saying about, you know, social media actually like upping the envy factor? Is that new, or is it a game changer?
I think that there are real studies that have shown, for example, more time you spend on Facebook or other social media, the more depressed you are. But we never know if that's cause or effect, if, you know, depressed people, home alone, not going out, or spending more time on social media, or it's actually causative. I do think there is something real and new here, though, that is probably partly a true cause, because nobody puts their worst pictures up on Facebook, right? We're all seeing the curated selves of others. Plus, you're envious of how young everybody else looks, or, you know, all their haul, as you said, or whatever they're doing. They seem to be having fun, and no one's posting how bored they are, or maybe they are, but that's a minority. And then you have the sense of loss that she added. Because I think that Facebook, for particular age groups, mine included, is an incredibly nostalgia-inducing device. You see your high school friends that you haven't seen in 20 years, or old photos that they post to that group, or old flames that you'll live across the world, or whatever. It's a very artificial kind of social world that I can see inducing all these negative emotions.
It may not be entirely the truth also.
Right.
Let's bring in Orion from Omaha. Hi, Orion. Welcome to On Point.
Hello.
Hi. You're on with us.
Yeah. I was wanting to offer another perspective on jealousy. First of all, a person would have to recognize that we have a conscious mind and a subconscious mind. And when a person feels the emotion of jealousy, in my perspective, they're actually condemning themselves and not appreciating themselves. And when this emotion is strong, then they cause the subconscious to be affected. And then the subconscious mind then affects the physical body.
Oh, interesting.
And creates your environment. So when a person is jealous, then they are basically condemning themselves.
Arian, thanks for that point. I want to bring it to Peter Tuohy, because Peter, you looked at, as I said before, you looked at how jealousy has played out as a theme in the arts and in theater and film, books, novels. And this notion of self-hatred does seem to go hand in hand often in the topic of jealousy. Very, very rarely is a jealous character very happy with himself.
It seems so. The notion of the subconscious playing out and somehow or other harming the body does seem to be a theme in this in the sort of literature that's associated with it. Whether you can square it with the sorts of things that I've been or that I was suggesting to and Dalton perhaps earlier on, I'm not so sure that sometimes jealousy is a good thing. Mm-hmm. If you're one of those monkeys getting the cucumbers and not the grapes, it's mm-hmm. it's not subconscious there. It's a matter of social equity. So I guess you have to balance the two sorts of things. The Bible doesn't help us on this because it condemns the emotions so roundly that we tend to instinctively shy away from it.
Dodai, speaking of the Bible's condemnation, is there anybody that's pushing back at all against the sort of look at everything I have culture in social media? Is anybody condemning it, or is everyone swept up helplessly going along for the ride?
I mean, I am not sure about that, but I definitely try to avoid the what they call FOMO, fear of missing out. And, you know, I think that it's great to have a sort of voyeuristic view of, oh, look at what fun these people are having, and not take it personally, and try to just, as the other caller said, focus on what you do have.
David is calling from Austin, Texas. David, welcome to On Point.
Hi.
Hi.
About 25 years ago, I was fell in love with a woman, and after approximately a month of a great relationship, she informed me that, oh, she happened to also be in love with another man and had been before we met.
Oh, great.
That entered us into about 7 years of what we now kind of glibly termed our spiritual Olympics, where we were going to look at ourselves and get over our senses of ownership and our senses of jealousy. And I just have to say that I think for a very high, well into the 90th percentile, that it just plain doesn't work. It ended up being a pretty traumatizing long-term event where, as a friend said, there's a lot of times when you're watching a porn movie that you're not in.
Was the other person in the relationship more excited about the project of defeating jealousy than you were, or were you on board for that?
Well, I think that's where my intellect and my, oh, I should be able to get over jealousy, I should be able to get over my sense of jealousy, that kind of trumped everything until kind of towards the end of 7 years when I still had not really practiced the open relationship part, but was willing to allow her, when I finally just woke up. And I notice I travel in some very liberal circles, and so I'm often introduced to people that that talk about, oh, I'm in an open relationship, or I'm going to a book study about a new book on polyamory that explores open relationships. And I guess I'd just like to hear what these people that have been studying about that, because I seem to think that there's probably less than 5% of people that can actually make, you know, a polyamorous relationship work. So,
all right. Thanks very much for your call, David. Dalton, what about David's point about attempts at open relationships, attempts to consciously say, we're not going to be jealous?
Yeah, I think he's absolutely right that it's very hard to use your conscious mind to overpower and tame very primitive emotions like jealousy. I'm thinking of My godfather, who in the 60s lived on a commune in Northern California that was polyamorous, and everyone fought about who would sit next to whom on Saturday night when they showed a film. It wasn't about who was having sex with him, but there had to be some outlet for jealousy and envy, and it was the seating arrangements at weekly movie night. So I think that you can squash these emotions down, and some people are more successful than others, but they're going to somehow pop out usually.
Let's bring in Ben from Portland, Maine. Ben, welcome to On Point.
Hey, how are you doing?
We're good.
I noticed that you guys were talking about relationships, and so I wanted to offer another perspective on relationships and jealousy. Theater, and how sometimes when a person gets a lead romantic role, how their significant other can be jealous of the person that they're working with.
Has this happened to you?
No, this hasn't happened to me, but I know a lot of people in my local theater community who have worked with another person. In fact, there was a show where a man that I know and a woman were working together in a romantic sense on stage. And so the wife of the man had a lot of animosity toward the woman playing the role. Mm. And so you see that kind of stuff all the time in theater.
She did not accept that her husband kissing another person in public was just a job.
Right, yeah. And they thought that there was something else going on. And you do see it all the time, you know, not to say that all theater people, spouses are jealous. I mean, I've seen a lot of people.
No, but I would think that would have to be – I think that would have to be pretty hard unless somebody is really also possibly part of theater as well. I'm just thinking in terms of the comments they would get from – all right, Ben, thanks very much for the point. Let's bring in Doug from Cleveland, Ohio. Doug, welcome to On Point.
Hi. Hi. I was curious. A gentleman caller that came in before talking about how the subconscious affects our perceptions of jealousy and envy. I wanted to take that even one step further. I used to be a very jealous and envious person. I lost friendships over it, struggled with my family for a while, and one day I just decided to alter my diet over to being a vegan, and thoughts I couldn't shake for a long time, negative thoughts about other people and how they were doing and how I was struggling, all of a sudden it started to fall by the wayside. I mean, now mind you, I did see CE therapy for a very long time, from about middle of high school up until now. I still am, but I never found benefit from it until I became a vegan.
So you're, in a sense, you're saying you can't quite sort out whether it was the therapy or the diet, but we are still circling this question of whether there's this biological component to jealousy, and we've touched on it in the evolutionary sense. But Dalton Connolly, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that there's brain chemistry involved in this, and that it could be affected by such a thing as diet, exercise, medication, whatever?
It's certainly possible. I mean, increasingly we know that there is a direct link between the microbiome in the gut and, you know, what they're processing and what kind of food you put in there, and mood and emotion and neurological functioning. So it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility, although I don't know of any randomized controlled trials that have done that.
Well, I want to close by sharing a few more tweets because they I like when things tie up with lovely and beautiful thoughts, such as this one from Facebook. Michael Essa wrote to us, "I am jealous of people with endless empathy like the Dalai Lama." So how many people out there are jealous of the Dalai Lama? This is On Point. I'm John Donovan in for Tom Ashbrook, and we have been talking about the topic of jealousy. I want to thank all of our guests. Dodai Stewart, she's director of culture coverage at Fusion.net. Thanks so much, Dodai, for joining us.
Thank you.
And Peter Toohey, professor of classics at the University of Calgary and author of the new book, Jealousy. Thanks, Peter, for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dalton Connolly, professor of sociology at New York University and author of Parentology, Everything You Wanted to Know About the Science of Raising Children But Were Too Exhausted to Ask. Thanks very much, Dalton, for joining us.
Thanks, John.
And you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, On Point, what is an excessive drinker and what is an alcoholic? What's the difference? We will talk definitions, risks, and treatments. I'm John Donvan, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.